Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
I am Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
We're live in 3, 2, 1.
Well, greetings and salutations, everyone, from West Point, Mississippi, a new opening for the boss at the end of the table, who seemed to think that we were getting a little stale with our opening.
Oh, well, welcome to the Gamekeeper Studio. Bobby.
Well, it was repetitious.
It was, and it was kind of iconic with your delivery and all. So I was just, like you've taught me, everybody's always a target. So
everybody's a target. I felt like I was a target on that one. I changed it up a little bit.
I think
sorry.
You should go back.
I think you should go back too.
Yeah.
Okay. West Point.
All right.
Home of Mossy.
Yeah, we
are. Gamekeeper Studio.
Yeah, that's us.
That's us.
Welcome, everybody. Mm-hmm. So here we are. It's home of Hercules. The bowels of the mole hole.
I think that's
home of Mossy Oak.
Now, you could come have a better name for this place than the bowels.
Yeah, we could. So, look, today we've got a guest we've been trying to have for a long time.
Yeah.
And we'll get to him in a minute, and we'll get him introduced properly. I'm looking around the room. We got Dudley, Lanny's on Facebook or Angie's List or something. Toxie's texting somebody, probably trying to get some work done. We got Riley standing, Riley from the warehouse. We're going to ask him a couple of questions.
Do we need to get Riley a chair? He's making me nervous.
No, this won't last long. But Lanny always asks me, who's this episode going to be brought to you by?
Who's this episode going to be brought to you by?
This one is brought to us by ATN Thermal Scopes.
Nice.
They make some really good equipment. And Riley from the
Riley's
warehouse.
Riley's been field testing it, hadn't he?
Has got a Springfield rifle. And he's got an ATN scope, and I have kind of given him the code to a gate.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say Larry Moore helped with that, but Riley would like an update. How are you liking the ATN scope?
I mean, they're pretty awesome. I mean, they're easy. They're smart scopes. Of course, they're a lot smarter than me, but I can operate them, and they work, you know, pretty easy. And every time I use it, you know, it gets, you know, I figure out something else with it. But, I mean, it does the job for sure.
So you're going down there in the black darkness.
Sneaking in.
Getting out of the truck and tiptoeing down road. How many pigs have you killed?
So far, about 3 or 4, I think.
Nice.
They're just how solid it is. Every picture I get, I mean, it's a group of 3. That's the biggest group.
So 3 pigs, how many shots are we talking about? 15, 20?
Well, we ain't counting that. I hadn't kept up with it.
I've seen some videos, and it's pretty good. You know, you see the flash, you see the blood, and you see pigs running everywhere.
Your ammo bill must be incredible.
Yeah.
I had a bunch stocked up, so I'm good. I hadn't spent any money on them anyway. Not in a while.
Well, all right. I knew you had experience with the ATN scope. I wanted to get you.
Definitely spoil you for sure.
The one we've got here, they sent us one for us to do some television work with. Yeah. It's in Bottomland.
Hey, everything's great in Bottomland.
Yeah, great looking scope. I can't wait. So we'll all have access to it soon.
Cool.
When I say all, we need to make sure it doesn't get all the way to the end of the table. We may not get it back.
I helped sight one of those things in one time at night, and we were ringing a gong at 300 yards with one of those things. It's impressive.
So when you say
at night.
Smart scope, what does that mean?
I think you can record, because we've shown some of Riley's hunts of you can record on it.
It does. It's got a ballistics calculator in it for to calculate for your weight of your bullet and all that. And
so you dial this thing in depending on what you're shooting?
Mm-hmm. You can do the windage. I mean, it's a lot of stuff that I don't know about, but I mean, you've got several settings in there for like even the environment, what's going on out, you know, the weather and all that stuff.
Yeah, humidity. Wow. How have I missed out on this?
Is it Bluetooth compatible?
Yeah, Bluetooth on your phone. I can hook to my phone and somebody can be looking at my phone, see what I'm seeing, thing I'm seeing.
Huh, that's pretty sweet.
Mac, we can't even get him to be here on time.
I know,
but yet
he knows how to
operate a scope with Bluetooth.
He's probably staying up a little too late chasing pigs.
Sometimes.
He looks a little tired sometimes when he gets here.
Yeah. All right. Long night.
Yeah. All right, Riley. Well, we appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Riley.
Yep.
We appreciate you, buddy.
We'll get an update in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, play. Keep it. Well, you know, Riley, we posted a picture. He had a homemade pig trap.
Yeah.
And he learned that pigs can fly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You didn't know they had wings. So he's gone.
Riley's learning a lot as we go here. So.
With all this flooding, they're going to be pushed out and be a good place to eliminate a few good time.
In the hills, the edge.
On the edge, that's right.
Yeah. So you've got a scope, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I've used it. I loved it. Yep.
They are incredible.
Yes.
They are incredible. All right, guys. So let's turn the page. So with that being said about some of these invasives that we are dealing with around here, we've got a guest. His name is Trapper Mike. He's also known as
the Python Cowboy.
He's got a big Instagram following and YouTube. I think he's got all kind of stuff in the works. But this guy owns Martin County Trapping and Wildlife Services. I didn't even know this was a thing, but he's the grand champion of the Florida Python Bowl. Now, that sounds like something that we ought to send Dudley down there to compete
in.
But he's a professional hunter, and he's a conservationist. But he spends his days trying to rid South Florida of invasive species. So, Trapper Mike, we are so happy to have you.
Yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Happy to be here. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Someday when I grow up, I think I want to come to work for you.
Yeah, no, that'd be fun. Get to hunt. Yeah.
It does look like you have a lot of fun with this, but it's got to be dangerous, isn't it?
There's definitely worse jobs to have. I have a lot of fun out there, but yeah, it can, sometimes it can be dangerous for sure.
So are you that guy, if somebody's got a skunk underneath their house, they call Martin County Trapping and you come out there and help them with that?
Yes and no. When I started my company, yeah, I was doing a lot of raccoon calls and different stuff like that. Nowadays I focus more on, what I feel is more important and what interests me. Which is more, invasive species, iguanas, monitors, hogs, pythons, and a little bit of alligators as well.
Yeah, it seems like Florida has the introduction point to so many, more than you named. I can think of some more invasive species. I wonder why that is. Is it because of the Port of Miami they get in somewhere down that way?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's a number of things, I think it kind of goes back to a little bit of the old cocaine cowboy days, that culture back then. They had tigers and big snakes and all kind of crazy animals. And it became popular. The exotic pet trade here in South Florida is very popular.
Ah, that makes sense for part of it.
And you get a lot of people that get the animals for the wrong reasons. They get tired of them and don't take good care of them, let them go, or they escape. And now I'm dealing with them.
Yeah, and it doesn't get cold either, so most of them can survive.
And they got lots of good habitat down there.
It is. It's kind of like the perfect storm. We have the Port of Miami, where a lot of them come through on shipping containers. We have the reptile trade down here, the exotic pet trade. And then it's the perfect climate and habitat for these animals to thrive.
Yeah, wow. So how'd you get into this?
That's always been something I've been into. Even as a kid, I had held a lot of the animals I'm hunting today. I had all kind of different snakes, chameleons, poison dart frogs. I mean, you name it, I had it as a kid. And, wildlife in general was something I was into. Hunting, fishing, catching animals, trying to make them into pets. And I eventually just kind of started transitioning it over into trying to make money off of it, helping out, my neighbors, local ranchers, and eventually charging for it.
Yeah. Wow. Cool.
Well, the whole Python thing, it just, it kind of makes me just question your sanity for walking out there and pulling an 18-foot snake out of the woods. That's got to be dangerous. Have you got some stories about the pythons that you could tell us?
Yeah, I got
that a lot.
Plenty of stories, that's for sure. And yeah, you know, you definitely, you got to have something wrong with you in the head, I guess, to do a lot of the stuff we do out here. But probably one of the more known stories is the largest snake I've actually captured, which was a almost 18-foot python. And she was 135 pounds. And I'm out in the middle of the Everglades hunting by myself. That's how I hunt most of the time when I'm hunting these snakes. It's just easier for me to cover ground and do what I need to do when I'm out there alone. And I'm out there by myself, middle of the Everglades. I'm actually checking tree islands on my little 14-foot John boat. And I come across this massive snake, massive. You know, her body's almost twice as big around as my leg. I ain't the biggest guy. So I know a snake like this, I got to be careful with, obviously. But at the same time, I don't want to let her get away. So I do what I can to capture her. A snake that size, they're solid muscle. I definitely ain't, you know, I'm 135 pounds soaking wet and that's what she weighed. And, she was able to overpower me pretty quickly. Soon as I grabbed a hold of her tail, she started kind of dragging me out further into the swamp. She had her body tangled up in maiden cane and different vegetation, and I just was not gaining on her at all. And I knew she was going to eventually bring me out in the swamp where I just wouldn't have any control of her. And I know of a lot of python hunters that have lost big snakes this way. So, you know, we're kind of in this little bit of battle, and I dig my feet down in the limestone, and I'm able to stop her from dragging me out into the swamp. I'm not gaining on her, but she's not gaining on me any. And we're kind of in this python tug of war. And she then turns around and starts striking at me, which this is kind of what I wanted a little bit. I know if she turns and strikes at me, I'll be able to get a hold of her head, which as soon as I get a hold of her head, you know, that's much better control of the situation than where I'm at now. So she's striking at me. I dodge a few of her strikes, and she gives this big old strike. I dodge it. And then she recoils back maybe a sixth of the way. And normally they recoil all the way back for another strike. Well, she hit me with a little sneak attack strike and was able to get me on my arm, punctured an artery down here, a couple main veins coming off of it. And I was spraying blood everywhere. But the good news in that situation is when she did bite me, I was able to grab a hold of her head and she didn't wrap me. Normally, when a snake bites you like that, they're going to try to wrap you up and strangle you, which I'm very lucky she didn't do that. If she did that, you know, me being out there by myself and, you know, it's 100 degrees out, I'm exhausting myself wrestling with her. I could have definitely been in a bad situation if she latched on and tried to get around me. Solid muscle, like I said, she would have probably overpowered me, and I might not be here doing this interview with y'all today. Thankfully, that didn't happen. I was able to get her head. I had her under control, and at this point, I'm more worried about, you know, the blood I'm losing. It's very hot out here. I'm exerting myself. I'm not so much worried about bleeding out necessarily. I mean, it's crossing my mind with how much blood I'm losing. But I'm more so worried about blacking out. If I black out while wrestling with this snake, you know, I'm already feeling lightheaded. What's she going to do? She's going to probably wrap around me and finish me off. So, you know, I got to really kind of keep myself calm, not overexert myself any more than I am. But at the same time, I'm wrestling with this snake and I don't want it to get the best of me. Thankfully, snakes these size, you know, they're cold-blooded. She was out getting her son charging up, which she was very charged up when I grabbed her, but they gas out quick. They only have so much energy. Once they gas out, they're basically like a limp noodle, and it's a very heavy, dangerous limp noodle, but a lot easier to control when they get to that stage. She wasn't quite to that stage yet. I had to wrestle with her a little bit more, tire her out. I had a snake bag with me that I was planning on putting any snake I found in to get back to the boat where I could euthanize it. She was much too big to put in this snake bag. I actually ended up using the snake bag to tourniquet my arm while I'm wrestling with her. And all said and done, you know, I successfully subdued her, got my arm cinched shut, and I was able to drag her heavy ass back all the way to my boat, where then I put a bullet in her head.
Wow.
That's probably one of my most viral videos. It's on my YouTube. Anybody can go and watch it. And it's definitely one of my better ones.
Yeah. I didn't want to spoil it, but yeah, it was a good video.
So why not just go ahead and, you know, I'm interested in the euthanizing part of this whole equation. Why not just go ahead and shoot her out there in the woods?
Yeah. So that's the most common question I get. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, I'm usually out there for a few days at a time. I don't want to shoot a snake and then have to deal with it, putting it on ice, keeping it fresh. I'm making my money off of the skins. So it's very important that I keep the skins intact and fresh. I don't want to go out there with a shotgun and just start blasting them, because it's going to destroy the skin, which I make all my money off of. Aside from that, you know, the only way to get a real humane kill on these snakes is to first gain control of it. I know a lot of hunters that they come across a big snake like this, they don't feel comfortable going hands-on with it. So they try to shoot it in the head and they lose the snake. They end up just injuring it. And, you know, the snake may die, it may survive. But to me, that's not a successful removal. I have never lost a snake that I've come across, and that's because each one I go hands-on with. I grab it, gain control of it, and then I shoot it point-blank in the head, directly in the brain. They're like an alligator, you know. If you kill them anywhere but exactly in that brain, you're just injuring them. You're just wounding them. And, you know, to be honest with you, one of the main reasons is – wrestling these snakes is half the reason I do it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's an adrenaline rush. And, for me growing up, having these reptiles as pets, it's kind of like a dream come true for me to come out here and be able to interact with these giant snakes.
Sounds like a gun safety issue too. If you're trying to wrestle a snake out in the water.
Yeah. And he's trying to probably strike you.
Yeah. Yeah, totally see your point.
Get a little intense. Yeah. So it was the first one you wrestled. I mean, can you tell us about that? When's the first time you grabbed a python by the tail and went to cranking on it?
Yeah. Not too exciting of a story. You know, I'm a Florida boy. I grew up catching snakes barefooted and, you know, all kind of wild stuff. So the first python I actually came across was maybe like a 6-7 footer. And, you know, made easy work of it.
Got him down pretty quick. Yeah.
I think lot of us have a friend like that, you know, wasn't afraid to pick up a snake. You know, mine was a old buddy, Michael,
right,
from forestry school. And he would just walk up to a rattlesnake or something and pick it up, you know.
Yeah.
I
probably
wouldn't
not
do
the
that,
smartest guy out there. But
everybody had a friend that just loved having a bunch of frogs and snakes and stuff like that. And you sound just like that.
Yes, sir. What I've noticed is a lot of people, you know, they got this stigma where they're just terrified of snakes. You know, they want nothing to do with them. They can barely even watch them in a video. And it works out well for me. You know, I think that's been a part of my success, as people have been so intrigued by me hunting on something that they're so terrified of. But, you know, to be totally honest with you, there's old ladies out there catching pythons in the Everglades. You know, it's nothing real crazy. As long as you know how to handle them and you go about it carefully.
Sure.
You know, it's like anything else. It has its dangers for sure. But if you know what you're doing, you're good.
Right. And a lot of us have experienced a similar culture with these feral hogs,
where we
use our dogs to bay them up. And somebody goes in there with a Bowie knife and puts them down, you know, but
because that's the same
wrestling these snakes. I want to hear more about your dog and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Are you just putting the boat in? Is this just sight fishing pretty much?
As far as using the dog?
Yeah. I guess take us through a hunt, I guess, for the best way with and without the dog.
Yeah. So, the past 5-6 years I've been hunting this thing, I haven't been using a dog. Just this past maybe year and a half, I've started to implement using a dog to find the pythons for me. And it's definitely been a game changer, especially this past nesting season, which I'll get into a little bit. I first started with my lead hog dog, Moose. He's just a cur dog. And I kind of started using him out of necessity. I tried training these other dogs to help me do it, and they just didn't really have it. The snake was invisible. They'd be stepping on it, basically. And
I bet they didn't want to do that. I'm not trying to interrupt you. But
they were smart enough to say, I don't want to do this.
You see how big that snake is?
Yes, sir. But my lead dog, Moose, took to it, and, in the beginning, he was real good on it. He was finding the pythons for me. But I think he kind of figured out that he didn't want to do it neither. I swear, I've never seen anything like it. He just started losing motivation with it. I could just tell while he was out there hunting, he didn't really want to be there. And for a hunting dog, if he's not enjoying what he's doing, he's just not going to be a good hunter.
No doubt.
So now I'm using my lead iguana dog, Otto, which I don't know if you guys have seen him or not. He's the black bearded dog, and he has been killing it. He's this python nesting season alone, just this past 2 months, he's found, I think, like 20 pythons. Most of them have been gravid, full of eggs. And he's found three active python nests now. He's actually found a python sitting on a clutch of eggs, two of which have been under the ground in tunnels, which is pretty incredible. There have maybe been a handful of nests ever found in the state. And this nesting season alone, we've found three. So, it's a big deal.
So are you walking through the Everglades with him? Are you in a boat?
Yeah. So I have my boat. I'm cruising down generally one of the canals. Sometimes we go out in airboat out into the swamp a little bit more. And I'm getting up on tree islands or spoil islands. Mm-hmm. I'm walking with him. I like to have him close in front of me where I can see him. We got moccasins out there. We got alligators and we got big ass pythons that could eat them. So, I got to be very careful with them, and I am. Stay close to him, and basically I'm looking for his body language. It's obvious to me when he's getting on something, and generally he'll go on point and point where it's at. Sometimes if it's moving in front of him, he will try to catch it. He bays it up, and, that's something I'm trying to work on a little bit with him. I don't want him catching the snakes at all, biting them, obviously, for his safety and to not damage the skin that I use for leather products. So, while we're out there catching these pythons, it's all a training the whole time. It's very hard to train at home for these snakes. They're illegal to possess, outside of the Everglades hunting them. You can't just keep them as a pet. So it's very hard to train with. You really need to kind of be out in the field and doing it for him to learn. And he's been doing great.
Cool. What kind of dog did you say he was?
He is a German wire hair pointer.
Wow.
Yeah.
I bet those Yacht Terriers would be good.
Isn't that what Jeff
says? Yeah,
that would be great for sure.
Yacht Terriers.
You need a kind of like a versatile, really driven dog. Wire hairy dogs, German dogs do really well.
Yeah, they said that they were bred for fox hunting primarily. They brought them over here for their incredible tracking dogs, but they're so ferocious, even though like a grown male is probably, I don't know, get 25 pounds or so, but they teach them to track to the foxhole den and wait, and then they give them two commands, one or the other. One is go in and drag them out alive. The other one's go in and kill them, drag them out dead. And that's what they do. They're so ferocious. So
wow,
they sound like they would be great at it too.
Yeah,
especially with you training. Yeah, you talk about some on the job training. Now that's
serious.
Yeah, that's it.
That's interesting.
I got buddies. You, those Yag Terriers for hogs even.
Yeah. I've never seen anything.
They're ferocious.
We couldn't keep them. I mean, it was just too ferocious.
Yeah. So, sure. But that snake that was underground, you know, with the bed, I assume you crawled down in there and pulled him on out of there, huh?
I dug him out. Yeah.
There we go.
Took a while, dug him out, and then kind of get up in there, reach in there and grab it out. Yeah. A lot of times when I find him in holes, which, you know, I've only found maybe a handful in holes. It's very rare. Now with the dog, I'm finding a lot more, which, you know, all of this that we're finding this season, and especially with the dog, finding them and nesting in holes, this is all crucial information to help us fight these invasives and get them out of the ecosystem. You know, we're learning all of this. This is all really new, groundbreaking stuff. And just since, you know, I've showed that we're finding them in holes, a buddy of mine found them in holes, we're seeing other people go out, look in these holes, dig them out, and they're being successful as well. Where, you know, before we didn't really realize that they're taking advantage of these holes like they are. But a lot of times when I find them in these holes, I almost got to offer myself, you know, to get bit, to get the snake out, because it gets in a position where you got no choice. You just got to.
Gracious. Do you wear a glove?
Hope for the best.
Do you wear a glove when you offer your hand?
Nah, come on, man. I wouldn't be able
to. We're talking Florida. Florida here.
We're talking Florida. This is Everglades. He probably don't even wear shoes.
But that's interesting that, you know, you're having to train your dog on site. It's obvious you need a real personable dog that aims to please. You know, that's similar to how we train our labs at our kennel. You
that's
know,
right.
they want to please you.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we can train these dogs, you know, at the kennels outside. You really can't, because you can't possess pythons. So that's really neat that you have to do that on site. And
it's a great
takes a special individual dog to do that.
We talked about it on another podcast. It's kind of the algebra thing, but he's making a great reference to it in that one of Mr. Gibson's top things he would love to see in a dog over anything else is biddable. Being biddable,
that's
biddability
right.
is like basically that dog lives to please you, watches what you do, is looking for you to do, you know, instead of worried about his own self. And it's clear that dog you're talking about is an incredibly biddable dog, which means it's like for Mr. Gibson. So we just, when you get the dog, take it home, just teach them. See, sit, stay, come, whatever you want to, just teach them to learn. And if they're a biddable dog and you teach them to learn at an early age, whatever you teach them, you can teach them the rest of their life because you've actually, quote unquote, taught them to learn. And what you're saying is probably the greatest example of it I've ever heard, because you can't train one from as a puppy.
Oh, Mike, I bet you're worried to death, though, that dog's going to get struck or something when he's just a little bit out of your sight.
Oh,
he's got to be a worried wreck.
That dog is like, if someone was to offer me $100,000 for that dog tomorrow, I'd confidently say no. I mean, that dog is so valuable to me. Just not which is just the pythons, but the iguanas. Mm-hmm. He's crucial to me. And, you know, that's always in the back of my mind when I'm out there. You know, we're in a dangerous area, especially dangerous for a dog. And his drive can get him into some sticky situations. So I constantly have to be on him. If I'm out there and I hear water at all, I call him right back to me. I don't want him near that water, in that water.
Right.
He needs to stay up on that island. Otherwise, you know, he'll be gator bait very quick.
Yeah, because even the pythons, I mean, I'm guessing. I mean, that would be a perfect prey for a python to grab him and then squeeze him to death and eat him, right?
Absolutely. And it would happen quick. They squeeze with such force that, I mean, it would kill him very quickly.
Ooh.
Was that
he doesn't leave my sight, you know, and if he does, it's for a split second when I'm getting on the other side of the bush with him. You know, it's obviously thick out there and he can easily get away from me, but this whole time I've been out there with him and he's just a very smart dog. And you're right. He aims to please. He wants to do what I want. And he's learned that doing what I want produces what he wants, which is game.
Yes.
And he does. He knows that I want him to stay close. He doesn't get real far. A lot of times I'll even catch him kind of standing and looking back, waiting for me. Mm-hmm. Then when he sees me, he'll kind of continue on.
That's good.
So, you know, it is. It's just working as a team and learning together.
Big time.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a saying for you can use. I hadn't heard you say it yet, so I'm going to throw it out there for you. That I call, they know what I talk. People ask about it. I've got three dogs at the house now. And we got our new pup, Forrest, who's great. We just actually had surgery, but he's doing great. And then his mom was Willow, but then I've got Gus, my buddy. And he's fixing to be 11. He's 10 years old now. And they were saying, is Gus your hunting dog? I go, no. He's actually my business partner. And so and we don't hold a candle to what you have as a dog, as a business partner, but it's the coolest thing to think of. And in those terms, that dog is your business partner.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. He is a crucial part to the operation in so many ways.
So cool. We love dogs so much here. That could be the best dog story I've ever heard, honestly.
It's a good one. You need to watch some on YouTube. So Mike, when, I've watched you pull some of these out of holes, and then you've got these, I think there's a word for it, gravitod, or the cluster of eggs. What do you do with those eggs?
So gravid is actually when the eggs are still inside the python. She's not pregnant because she doesn't have, you know, live babies in there. They're eggs. So you call it gravid, and that's what you're referring to. The actual clutch of eggs is a clutch. And what did you ask me what I do with them when I find them?
Yeah, well, I've just seen it's probably pretty obvious what you do with them, but you bring them out, I suppose.
Yeah, I get them out of the hole. But no, that's a very good question. A lot of people ask me, you know, when I get them out, what the heck do I do with them? I've had people offer to buy them so they can hatch them out and all kind of crazy stuff. You know, they are valuable. Obviously, I don't want to do any of that. I freeze them, which kills them. And then I actually, will put them in jars with some like formaldehyde and different, preserving agents. And then I donate some and sell a bunch of them as educational displays. You know, it essentially looks like a big old dinosaur egg. They're about the twice the size of an alligator egg and pretty substantial in size.
Wow. That's cool. Mm.
Very cool.
So are you guys making a dent in these things down there?
Is it working?
Do you wake up and feel like this is a never-ending battle?
Yes, absolutely. and it kind of is. It kind of is. This season, more than ever, I've been thinking that. We're seeing, you know, bigger, not necessarily bigger snakes being caught, but we're catching, like, the state record was just broken yesterday. A 19-foot one was caught. So, you know, and this season alone, I know of, like, five or six other giant snakes that were caught just from people I know. Me and my team have caught two ourselves. So, you know, it's definitely discouraging when you look at it like that. What I try to focus on is what we're seeing in the areas that we're focusing. Right. You know, the areas me and my guys are hunting, we're seeing native wildlife starting to bounce back. We're starting to see otters and raccoons and marsh rabbits where we literally wouldn't see a single thing before. And, you know, we're seeing that in the areas that we're all hunting. But one thing I will say is a lot of the hunters, especially a lot of the state hunters, they like to focus on these hot spots. They're all hunting Tamiami Trail, which is a public highway, or, you know, one or two particular levees that produce. And we really need to spread out more. We need to get more out into the swamp, hunting these islands, hunting the sawgrass, and spread our efforts out so then we can help the wildlife in these areas. From what I've been seeing, pythons are taking over the Everglades still. Yeah. You know, the areas we're hitting, we're helping and we're managing, but everywhere else, they're just taking over. They're spreading north. They're laying eggs in new places that we haven't seen nests before. And it's definitely can be a little discouraging. You know, with that being said, we still need to manage them. We still need to try to do everything we can to combat these invasive snakes. You know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Management is possible. Eradication is never going to happen. We have 1.5 5 million acres of impenetrable swamp that is the Everglades. Most of it we can't get to without special vehicles. And a lot of those areas, those special vehicles are not permitted. So our hands as Gladesmen are kind of tied. What I would like to see is the state give a little more access back to the Gladesmen, back to the general public, and allow us to put the eyes and the ears back into the Everglades where they once were. As soon as they turned it into national park and had all these restrictions and kicked the Gladesmen out of the Everglades, that's when it really got out of control. That's when these pythons exploded. Mm. You know, you got to have stewards of the land out there to keep up and manage the land. That's just kind of
100%.
The state we're in. You know, we have people moving here every day. Our wildlands are being shriveled up from overdevelopment. We have a growing panther population that we really can't sustain. And these invasive snakes are just swallowing up the last bit of struggling wildlife we got left. So
that's a sad story.
It is. Mm-hmm. We need to go down there and catch one, Bobby.
Well, hey, look, just I feel like, again, another little algebra thing, Dudley, is like, I want to say this in all seriousness, just like I would if a, you know, a whatever war vet colonel came in here. Thank you for your service. Mm-hmm. Because what you're doing is absolutely doing battle for a great cause, and your heart for the habitat and the earth and the area. And because, you know, you're connected to Everglades area is so cool. I just want to say thank you for your service. That's the best way I know to say it.
Yeah.
I appreciate that very much. I appreciate that. And it is, you know, we're trying to constantly figure out new ways that we can get the upper hand. And, you know, I always say my line is always, we need to continue to find new technologies, but at the same time, use old technologies like dogs. And, you know, the dogs have really been crucial while we're trying to figure out something new that can help us. And to kind of, you know, expand on new technology, I've taken out different researchers and scientists that are working on new stuff to help us find these pythons. One in particular is a specialized camera. They basically take a thermal camera mid-production and put a specialized lens in it. And this lens, instead of reading infrared and heat, it reads reflective properties of objects. And pythons are the most reflective thing naturally out in the Everglades. So, you know, besides a piece of trash, a python is going to reflect light in a different way than everything else. And these cameras pick that up very well. And wow. I think pairing these cameras with software that is already used, like in Africa, to fight against poaching, pairing it with that software on a drone would be very huge. A guy like me could pull up to a levee gate or even to a chain of islands, send up the drone. It could fly down that thing at 60 or 80 miles an hour. And with the software, send back to me exactly where it saw pythons on the side of the levee. And then I would know that, hey, this levee is going to be worth my time. Let me quickly get out there and see if I can get some of these snakes that the drone just picked up.
Incredible.
So, you know, stuff like that, I think we need to continue to use and try to figure it out.
So have you gotten your hands on one yet? Or have you got a promise on it pretty soon?
Yeah. So I took the guys out, we used it, and, you know, it was still just in the real preliminary stages. Last I heard, they're trying to get state funding to start to implement these and give them out to us.
Well, hopefully people listen to this. That's certainly a worthy cause. And not that much money to bring to fruition compared to the benefit.
Yeah, the impact they're having on the native landscape.
I'm not trying to bother the government of Florida, but somebody needs to rattle a cage, at least to get a couple out. Because the one thing it will do is prove, if it's 50,000 to fund a project to give y'all, you know, it seems like a lot, maybe to three or four of you that are great at it. Then they can, you know, you can show them what the investment would bring to the state, and then they could go do it. You know, if they would just let you have the first ones to prove it.
benefit to cost analysis.
Absolutely.
I've actually had a couple private companies, private investors reach out wondering how they can help with Florida conservation. So, you know, to me, that was kind of like a aha moment, like, man, you know, maybe I could get some private investors involved or some companies involved that want to help. And we're discussing it more with them. And, you know, I'm real excited about maybe having them fund like a detection dog program, you know, which I've already put together a couple of other guys to help me. And we're currently helping them train their dogs. So that's already in the work, but, you know, we could use all kind of help with it. So
the drone's a game changer. And I was thinking right before you said it, I was thinking about thermals. And then I realized they won't show up on a thermal because they're whatever temperature
it is. Cold-blooded. Yep. Cold-blooded.
So yeah, we got the thermals. I mean, hell, we've had a $500,000 thermal drone up, and you're better off with a spotlight.
So if you guys can perfect this technology you're talking about, wouldn't that allow you to be able to show I assume the part of the Everglades that you can't go on is federally protected, but you would be able to at least demonstrate to them the population that was in that area without doing any damage, you know, fly that drone over and say, look, this is what we're dealing with. It seemed like you'd be able to show them if you had that technology.
Well, you know, the state in this past couple of years, they have allowed state contracted hunters only to go into the national park to hunt pythons. But again, that's only on the main road going in and out of the park because you're not allowed to get out into the actual swamp with anything. So it's very minimum, you know, it's not much. But the main thing I really push for is allowing general public access again in a lot of these areas, which they've turned down. And I feel like, you know, them having just state contractors like us out there, it manages it, but it's not really going to get rid of it. We need the general public to get involved, to see the value in these snake skins, to see that their meat actually surprisingly isn't that bad to eat. You know, a disclaimer on that is anything, you know, 10 foot, 12 foot or bigger is going to have mercury content that I would not suggest eating, but
that's sad in itself right there.
Yeah, it is. And that kind of, you know, goes back to another issue we're having here in Florida. The pythons, the state loves to say all of our problems in the Everglades is because of the pythons. And it's just not true. You know, 90 to 99% of our small fur bearing game is disappeared from the Everglades. And they blame that on the python. I think a more accurate answer for that is the way we've been managing the water, the overdevelopment, and the invasive species, mainly the pythons. You know, our wildlife is already struggling out there because of the poor water quality, because the state constantly floods and dries up the Everglades in an effort to manage the water. And obviously the overdevelopment, shrinking all of our wildlands and then polluting our wildlands. Mm-hmm. You know, our wildlife is already struggling because of all that. And then you throw the invasive python on top and it just, you know, decimates them. So, you know, we have a lot in the Everglades that we need to focus on and try to change. All of the problems are very complicated and there's not a clear cut solution. So, you know, there's a lot of work to be done for sure. Yeah. Our alligators can have high mercury content as well. And it all comes back from eating the fish and laying in the water, absorbing the water.
Wow. It always is complicated. A lot of people think it's one simple thing. Like we discuss the wild turkey population all the time. You know, we're big turkey hunters. And in the past, it seems like people always thought it was, you know, one thing, you know, over harvest or this or that. No, it's usually several holes in the proverbial bucket.
Mm-hmm. I like that Gladesman term.
That is an interesting term. Yeah, can you kind of explain that a little bit, Mike, the Gladesman?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yes, sir. Yeah, so the Gladesman is, you know, obviously comes from Everglades. And the Gladesman, Historically, which I'm actually on the board of directors of the Florida Gladesman Foundation. And, you know, a few times throughout the year, we have a mobile museum we bring around to parades, airboat shows, buggy shows, fairs, all kind of stuff. And we kind of educate about, you know, what the Gladesmen were and what the Gladesmen have become. And historically, the Gladesman was a little bit of an outlaw. There was, you know, drug runners, moonshiners, poachers, and then you did have commercial fishermen and alligator hunters and all that stuff. And today it's more evolved into a keeper of the land, protector of the Everglades. You know, us Gladesmen, we love the Everglades, and that's where we truly feel home. And we want to protect our home and preserve it. And, you know, kind of going back to the old Gladesmen, that's where airboats came from.
Yeah.
You had these guys, you know, probably running drugs or whatnot in airplanes, dropping them out in the Everglades and needing a vehicle to get around. And I'm sure it was, you know, some redneck that seen his crashed airplane was like, I bet if I put that motor in a dang John boat, you know, it would be pretty badass.
Yeah, that we'd get across there then.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, it's interesting you say Gladesman, because we consider ourselves woodsmen, you know, and those kind of things. And it's not a different story, you know, because commercial hunting and stuff like that. But then what, like Mr. Fox says it best, the worm turns. It's like, hey, I'm taking, but I really got to figure out how to, you know, give back and protect it. So
absolutely. And that's, you know, that's what it is nowadays. The Everglades needs our help, and the Gladesmen want to help it.
And nobody better to do that than the Gladesmen that know it so well.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's, you know, the big thing is we try to kind of, you know, present ourselves as, you know, that's who we are now. You know, we want to help the land. We're not just trying to use the land.
Who was it that said wildlife cannot speak, so we must speak for them? Who said that? It's just a great quote, and I can't remember who said that.
I'm scared to guess, but maybe Aldo.
That'd be my first guess.
Or Mike, what Teddy, else? Maybe. What other kind of invasives are you chasing around these days?
All kind of stuff. And it feels like every week something new. I just actually got an email from FWC letting me know to be on the lookout for invasive mongooses. So, you never know. But here's one. Here's an Egyptian goose. We got Egyptian geese, Muscovy ducks. I've caught Nile monitors, white throat monitors, black and white Argentina tegus, veiled chameleons, panther chameleons, green iguanas, Mexican spiny-tailed iguanas, mevas, Cuban nightingales, red-headed agamas. I mean, all kind of invasive fish.
He's busy.
We have a couple different species of monkey. I'm actually getting brought on to go remove monkeys up in Central Florida on a piece of property that they have completely taken over. And the monkeys actually in Central Florida, fun fact, they have herpes. So gotta be
Bobby, you better not go down there.
Oh Lord.
He's already got some herpes.
Oh my goodness. How in the world did a piece of property get taken over by monkeys in Central Florida? It sounds like a movie.
Well, yeah, it did. It's from the Tarzan movie back in the 60s. They're in Silver Springs. There's a population of them. And some of that population, I don't know what happened, but they ended up 40 miles west of there on one of my client's properties. I actually, this particular client recently had a problem with an alligator eating his protection dogs. Ooh. And that's how I got originally linked up with him. And now he's dealing with herpes monkeys. So, you know, Florida life.
Wow.
Great. I mean, I can only imagine, though, with what he's painting the picture of and so many people down there with these places, and then they let it go and they get out. Plus, there's major population centers around the periphery.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite as much to the south. But, you know, like nature adapts to everything. It seems like all this stuff would end up going to this wilderness – gigantic wilderness area, and then there's no one there. Once they get there, there's no stopping it. You know, mm-hmm.
That's it.
Unless they you're lucky enough, they're in an area you already can get to, and you can get them before they get started. But once they establish, and you know, I always wonder how do these tame or different species, how do they adapt in the wild? Because like, you know, we never could introduce turkeys anywhere, because if you just got eggs or poults and moved them somewhere, you know, they were tame. They didn't know how to survive, but they couldn't adapt until we did the cannon net. But all this stuff seems to have just taken up and thrived.
Well,
these reptiles are amazing at adapting to any situation you put them in. They're the ultimate survivors, the ultimate invasive species. I mean, it blows me away every year. There's something that I'm just like, holy cow, you know. These snakes, especially these pythons, these large ones, they can lay a nest of over 100 eggs,
most of which survive.
When they're born out of the egg, they're already 2 foot long, which is the size of our adult native snakes. So nothing's really preying on them. Their camouflage and the way they hunt, our natives have no instincts or defenses against them. I've literally watched a rabbit hop right to a python, and I had to like jump on it to stop it. And they're like machines. I always say, you know, they're dumb. They're not thinking, but it's almost like they're smart because they're just so hardwired to do what they do. They're so good at surviving. You know, like I said, if you don't hit it directly in the brain, it's not dying. And that just kind of goes back to everything about it. Parasites, surviving without food or water. I mean, these snakes can literally go 6 months without eating a meal and they're still surviving. So it's a tall task to get rid of these.
Like
they evolved around natural predators in their home environment. And then when you move them somewhere else,
they don't have nothing recognizes them. I'm surprised though that the hogs don't eat the 2 foot snakes if they come across them.
There's no hogs in the Everglades anymore. They've been all eaten up either by snakes or panthers. One was killed 2 years ago in Big Cypress, a hog.
Wow.
That's crazy.
They're not really down here anymore. But aside from that, I don't think they're going to eat the pythons like that. You know, I've always heard of the hogs eating snakes and all that kind of stuff. I've thrown dead pythons in my hog pens, and they don't seem to like it too much. They love the iguanas, but the snakes, they never really, I think they're just so thick and muscular. It's just tough for them. I don't know what it is.
They eat small snakes.
Yeah. If anything's going to ever control them, it's going to have to be those first hatched out, you know, two footers.
No doubt about
it. Yes, sir. And I've seen owls, actually scoop a hatchling up right in front of me and eat it in my face, you know. Which,
one out of 100.
My money in the tree, but at the same time, it's good to see that our native wildlife's kind of fighting back. But that's just for a month or two. After that, they grow so quick that they're too big for anything to prey upon them, really. Here and there, you see alligators that are eating them. But, you know, in the scheme of pythons versus alligators, pythons are eating 100 times more alligators than alligators are eating pythons. I've personally rescued 3 adult alligators from being strangled by a python.
Wow.
And how many times have you guys come across a snake eating something? It's a very rare encounter.
Oh, yeah.
For me to come across that 3 times shows how much it's happening.
Yeah.
Now, you will see these videos of like a python or a gator thrashing a python, but you got to think about what happens when a gator eats a python and what happens when a python eats a gator. So when a gator eats a python, it's going to come across a dead one and just scavenge it. Or if it did kill it, it's going to stuff it up somewhere, let it rot, and make a spectacle over a few days of thrashing it around and eating it. When a python eats an alligator, it strangles it, swallows it, and disappears in a matter of 10 minutes. So you're not going to see that. You're going to see a gator eat a python 1,000 times more than you would the other way around.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
So let me ask you this. So with all the news, I mean, like today, like we saw on one of the Instagram posts about the state record being caught yesterday. So news gets out really fast. But with this Tamiami Trail, if I'm pronouncing that right, are there a lot of people that just like travel down there from, say, New Jersey that think they want to go python hunting and stumble out in the woods? And is that happening a lot?
It is. Yeah. I get a lot of people wanting to come out. You know, I do guided trips. People want to come out on guided hunts. And people just messaging me asking where they can go out on their own and try to be successful. And I don't ever mind telling somebody. I will say your chances of finding one are going to be a lot more if you book a hunt with me.
Yeah.
But, sure. You know, I don't want to discourage anyone. Go out, try it on your own. A lot of people go out, try it on their own, and then they end up giving me a call because it's, you could go out, you know, for a week straight and not find one. It's very tough. Right now is a good time of year. They are starting to move. And if you do cruise those roadways that they're crossing, you are bound to find one. You really are. They're crossing all night long. And, you know, I think those kids that just broke the state record, they're pretty new to python hunting, I want to say. I think they just started it within the last couple of years. Hopefully I'm not wrong on that. But, you know, the main thing is just getting out there and doing it and spending the time. That's what python hunting all is getting out there, figuring it out, and putting the time in. Especially if you're cruising those roadways, Tamiami Trail's a good one. You're bound to get lucky.
So these guys that come with you, that they've probably watched all these different television shows with these guys catching alligators and whatnot. They probably have one attitude before the hunt starts, and then I'm asking, do they have a different attitude once they see the snake? What happens?
Oh yeah, yeah. There's a lot. You know, you get these guys that talk real big until they. They're staring down that 10-footer, and then they're a little wary.
What? Yeah.
Well, I do.
It's funny. I've even had people that book a hunt. They're out on the hunt with me, and then I'm explaining to them, you know, how we're going to catch it, and they're like, "What? We're catching it by hand. We're not shooting it." Like, yeah. Like, what do you mean? Yeah.
We got to skin this thing.
But. Yeah, it is. You know, to a kind of a funny thing, a lot of people that book a hunt with me, believe it or not, I've had a dozen people that are trying to get over their fear of snakes. Huh. And they're coming out on this hunt to try to do that. And actually, one of the alligators I rescued, which actually is the whole reason I started my Instagram and everything. I never used to film anything or do social media. I had a guy out with me on a guided hunt, came out to get over his fear of snakes. And I came across an alligator being strangled by a python. I went down there, grabbed it, separated the two. He filmed the whole thing. And, you know, when it got to the point where I need to bag the snake, I just hand him the snake and I'm like, here you go. And he grabbed it and took it from me. Afterwards, he explained, you know, that he was absolutely terrified and crap in his pants. But he said he got over his fear that night. So,
you know, it worked. You have to go hunting with him, Bobby.
You know, one time I heard Jeff Foxworthy say, if anybody ever asks you to hold my snake, yeah. The answer is no.
No. No matter what they're talking about.
Oh, my goodness.
I just want to learn more about, you know, the iguana thing. These videos are great. Like, you'll take an NFL football player out and shooting these iguanas and things out of trees. You look like you're in residential areas. So I kind of want to ask about the regulations and all that good stuff.
Yeah. You know, I always tell people, especially when they're trying to book a python hunt, I'm like, you know, python hunts are great if you really want to catch a snake, but the iguana hunts are by far the most fun. I've never seen people have so much damn fun. We get out here when I take people out on the guided hunts, we're out on a boat, we're cruising down these canals I'm contracted on. And yeah, there's houses, there's all kind of stuff. And we're using these very high-end, high-powered air rifles. They're semi-automatic. 25 and 30 caliber, and they're badass. They're laser point accurate, and yeah, it's a really good time. My snake dog Otto, we were talking about earlier, helps me while we're out there. He'll go out, retrieve the iguanas you shoot, bring them back to you. And, you know, like the pythons, these iguanas are extremely resilient, extremely tough to kill. And a lot of times he's got to go in and capture these damn things himself and, you know, finish them off even. So it's usually pretty entertaining, the show the dog puts on, for sure. As far as the regulations and all that goes, you know, they're an invasive species. There's no bag limit. There's no season. Anybody can go out here and kill these things. But I will say it's easy to get yourself in trouble. You know, you're going to be shooting an air gun in public areas, and you want to make sure that you're hired or contracted or have permission to be where you're doing it. Your pellet is an extension of you. And if your pellet goes onto someone's property, they can technically trespass you. They could technically arm trespass you.
Wow.
So you need to be very, very careful. You want to make sure you're going about everything humanely, ethically. Don't leave anything dead behind. And you can't just throw away these iguanas either. That's wanton waste. So, you know, I have a dog to make sure that nothing's left behind, nothing's left wounded. And then I actually have leather products made from the iguanas, and then their meat I feed to my feral hogs that I fatten up and eventually sell as livestock. These hogs I catch with my dogs in different communities and ranches, bring them back to my ranch, fatten them up on iguana meat and all kind of other stuff, and then I sell them.
That's neat.
You got it going on. What you want? Python eggs, hogs.
You know, I gotta say, another little expression I've used, and we just recorded something yesterday, and I use the expression, you'd be the perfect spokesman for Dos Equis. But I'll have to say, you match that, at least plus some.
Yeah, very interesting, for
definitely
sure.
Could be the most interesting man that we've ever had on a podcast. And admiration, let me just add admiration to that, not just –
yeah, taking it back.
That's yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yeah, you've got to be tough as nails to do what you
oh,
do.
Oh, you think?
And before I forget it, Dudley wanted me to ask you if you could get him some python chaps. He was interested in some python leather.
He can hook you
we
up,
can
Doug.
Do it. Yeah,
Bobby usually makes fun of people for the things that he actually wants and is scared to say. So that was Bobby's plea for a pair.
Like I said, we've made all kinds of stuff. Here's some 1911 pistol grips.
Look at there. That's pretty cool.
I mean, you make it, we'll figure it out and make it.
So just think how big your bow could be.
I like to hunt with my stomach, whether that be for foraging or meat or anything. So what, are these Muscovy ducks? That's like the duck you buy in the grocery store. Like that really
delicious,
tasty, fatty domestic duck.
They're the best eaten thing on the canal. They really are. They are delicious.
And that's an invasive, and you can just go pick up all the free food you want.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And people are always amazed when I bring them out on these guided hunts. You know, they don't realize everything we're killing is pretty good tasting, even the iguanas. And, you know, I always say the Muscovy duck is the best thing on the canal. It really is. I had that guy Stale Cracker come down. He's real big on TikTok and all that. You know, he came down, hunted iguanas, and we got him a Muscovy duck. And he cooked that thing up, basted it in some butter, and man, it was absolutely delicious for sure.
Yeah, he knows how to cook, that's for sure.
Yeah, doesn't Merle Haggard have a song?
Okie from Muscovy.
Yeah,
That is a song.
That's not Muscovy.
That's a different one.
That's pretty bad. That's pretty. Mark that time code.
Bad dad joke.
Mac, you came
number
in
195.
Mac, you look like you had a question. What you got?
Yeah, I do. So I know you catch a lot of pythons, but do you ever catch any anacondas in the Everglades?
Ooh.
Well, I have a anaconda skin right here, but no, I've never caught an anaconda. that's actually from a zoo that donated the anaconda to me. It died in captivity, and they wanted it not to go to waste. So I had it tanned, and I actually use it for education.
How old is an 18 to 19 foot snake, roughly?
Really hard to say, you know, just because we don't know much about the wild snakes. We only know about captive pythons, really. But I would say 10 years old or more.
So take us through. They're saying
10 to 20 years old, even.
So they're 2 foot or so when they're born already?
But when they're born, they can reach 6 foot within a year.
That's what I was going to ask. Wow.
Yeah, they can reach 6 foot. It just all depends on how much they're able to eat, the opportunities that are presented to them. In captivity, I've heard of pythons reaching, like, I want to say 8 foot in a year.
Wow. Mm. Goodness gracious.
Wow.
Lanny, you got any concluding thoughts?
Just really cool what he's doing. You know, I see why he's called the Python Cowboys out there picking up these snakes and all these invasives and promoting, you know, what was supposed to be there and was there originally. So,
but he's got this connection to the earth right there where
the Gladesman.
Yeah. Right. Where his area is, and which is so cool. So much of this comes from that love.
Yeah.
He loved the love of the land there and he's making a living, but doing this and fighting that battle. Could be the by far the coolest story we've heard so far, Bobby. That's amazing.
Yeah, a lot of
my hat is off.
A lot of these folks we interview are doing their job to make a difference.
But, yes,
but they actually like it too.
Yeah.
Yep.
So pretty cool to be able to do what you enjoy and make a difference.
I used to say I wanted a place when I started the company. I wanted a place that when people's feet hit the floor in the morning, they couldn't wait to get to work because they loved it so much. And if they didn't, I politely, respectfully say you probably ought to go somewhere else. So, but wow, are you ever an example of that? That's amazing. It's just amazing.
It is. It's a blessing. You know, I'm a very lucky guy. Every day I wake up, do something I love, and it's super rewarding. And it gives me purpose.
That's so cool. Mm.
Well, so look, Mike, we always ask our guest a trivia question, and we've got a question that was prepared specifically for you. And so somebody that left a review on our podcast, if you get this answer right, they win a fabulous prize. And if you don't get it right, well, we're going to give them your cell phone number or something. So a lot of pressure on you. So we're going to turn this over to Mac Thatcher.
All right, Mike. Mm-hmm. So you're playing for Aurelius MD, and I looked up that name. It's a podcast reviewer's name, and that actually means the Golden One MD. So, and if you get this right, he'll win a Chapin Biologic Backpack Sprayer. So
nice. Chapin at ChapinManufacturing.com. Does something to make a great sprayer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we had a good one until somebody stole the nozzle off of it. Go ahead.
Oh, well, they ran over it with a forklift.
Oh, okay.
Riley.
It probably was Riley.
All right, so this is a true or false question, and full disclaimer, we're going to use scientific terms, so if you have your child or a young one there, they can listen to this part of the question. So snakes and lizards have not just one, but two penises, called a hemipenis. University of Sydney researcher Christopher Friesen says having two hemipenes may benefit males during mating. Is that true or false?
Yes, sir. That's true.
Wow.
Wow. So,
winner.
He's saying snakes and lizards have two penises.
I knew you. I'm sure you dug this up.
Well, if I found it interesting. Did you know that, Lanny?
I did not know that.
Did anybody in here know that?
I did not
know that. Bobby always digs up facts that he's envious of.
Yeah, that's right. There it is again. He wants some, I'm not even going to talk about that.
Dudley probably knew. Mike, what in the world is going on with these things having two?
Well, that goes back to, them being the ultimate survivor and invasive species. They don't got one, they got two. And each one is actually attached to its own testicle.
Wow.
And I'll tell you what, the day I found that out was the day that the python and the iguana became my spirit animal.
TMI for me. TMI.
Well, we're just trying to teach our listeners something. I bet we did.
Yeah, I sure learned something.
Oh, Trapper Mike, folks can follow you at Python Cowboy. We had hoped Dudley would sing you a song, but I don't think
we're going to work on that for next.
Yeah. But if you got anything you need to promote.
Yeah, Martin.
Yeah, Cowboy. Yeah. First of all, I really want to thank y'all for letting me get on here and kind of spread my message and all that. Means a lot. If anybody wants to support what I got going on, buy any of the leather products that I'm making from these invasive species and selling. I mean, they are top of the line stuff, beautiful stuff. You can check it out on my website, pythoncowboy.com. And if y'all want to come down on a guided hunt, come out with me or one of my trained guides, email pythoncowboyhunts@gmail.com and we'll get you all set up. We got lodging. A chef, if you need it, all kind of stuff, whatever you need. It's really a nice operation.
It sounds like
a good time.
Yeah, I think you need to get y'all down. Email you.
Yeah.
Come on down.
Well, we want to figure out how in the future to do it, a television show with you and film you doing some of this stuff. It just sounds incredible. So
I'd be honored. I'd love that.
All right, Mac, you got anything? We all good? Toxie, we all good?
Yes. I mean, we're so appreciative and grateful for you coming on. I know you said that about us, but what you do is just amazing.
Well, it's cool to see, like, game-keeping activities. We're so localized here to see, what he's doing now.
Not just the amazing, like, physical and the knowledgeable, but it's just like, how passionate he is and the spirit of the whole thing makes it even more special than how – cool it is.
Yeah, it does. So along that same note of gratitude, I want to thank everybody for listening to our podcast and supporting us. And, we really appreciate that. And we would appreciate if you would tell someone else, tell one of your friends about us. So we promise all the trivia questions aren't as bad as that one. But I'm saying nobody knew that.
I'm not.
That was a good one.
Yeah, for a wildlife nerd.
Yeah, that was a good one. I think we taught people. So I bet very few people knew that.
I'm with you. So I sure didn't.
All right, Dudley, did you know?
Did we not stumble across that at the same time the other day?
I think we did. Of course.
Yeah, probably did. So.
Chief Researcher's going to always have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, why don't you say goodbye, Dudley?
Goodbye, Dudley.
Get us out of here, Mac.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife Magazine. And don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt Podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.